I have a lot on my mind this evening. I hope I don't forget all this stuff. I should have wrote notes down before I came live. Welcome to Street Cop Training, the place where we give you videos on how to do your job better as a cop. For the people who haven't seen the post earlier, I think we have almost all the spots filled up, but maybe one or two spots left for Jesse Hartnetz. He's a Street Cop Training instructor who was shot in a line of duty. He gives a course called The Will to Live. We're doing our first one for a free class for Street Cop group members only. At the Madison Police Department, May 9th. If you want to come, it's a free spot. We have a few spots open on that one. The first thing I want to do is address a comment I have in a video we reposted from earlier, I think December of 2016, so almost a year and a half ago. And what I did the video was regarding license plate lookups and checks and how to make one bulletproof. We have like 5,000 views on it, 4,400. And it's a really good piece of advice to give people, and I'm adamant about it. I stand behind it. And everything that I put out here, I know is 100% correct. I'm not a dreamer and off in La La Land and not in touch with reality. This stuff is thoroughly, thoroughly checked before it's put out to you to ensure its validity, to make sure you don't go off and fuck up. Because then in turn, if I give you the wrong advice, I'm going to look non-credible. So far, in 6 years of teaching this stuff and 17 years associated with law enforcement, 14 years in the game, I have yet to be, corrected on a formal level. Right? Obviously, as a new guy, you make mistakes and stuff like that. But at this junction now, with being the street cop training instructor for you guys, the guy who comes on here and gives you information to help you do your job better, it's pertinent and important that I am accurate every single time I give you this information. If I find that I'm inaccurate on something, I promise you that I would step forward, have the humility, and deploy my humbleness and say that I was wrong. However, what I'm finding is when I get people who come to class ready to lock horns with me or engage with me, the truth always prevails. It's undefeated. I always applaud those who come forward and want to learn. But those know-it-alls are usually, I show them they really don't know what they're talking about pretty quickly with just facts. That's all it takes. So anyway, this is not in regard, I'm not saying anything bad about this gentleman who posted in this thing. So first of all, he talks about, and I'm not picking on you, having to do a matchup when you have a random plate inquiry. And I'm not going to get into the whole details of it. I posted my comment. But one thing he said that I found interesting was, hey, I've done this plenty of times. Prosecutors never had a problem with it. Let me be very clear with everybody here. There's a lot of people. Now, I meet a lot of people every year. We're doing well over 1,000 guys a year, probably getting closer to 2,000 mark. So 6 years of that, I've taught over, I don't want to say 6,000, but certainly in the area of 4,000 to 5,000 people have attended some form of street cop training, whether it's a one-day class or a two-day class. It may be shocking to some people, but guess what? There are a lot of people in the judicial system who don't know what they're doing. It may not be that shocking as you're watching these videos and realizing all the shit you've heard from people that you've entrusted to provide you the correct information seems to be contradictory to the truth. So although things may make it through the criminal justice system, maybe a prosecutor doesn't catch it. Maybe a judge doesn't catch it. Maybe a defense attorney doesn't catch it. Maybe a police administrator or police officer doesn't catch it. It doesn't mean it's correct, okay? If you get, you may hear something that I tell you to do to make sure your shit's bulletproof. And you may think I'm crazy. You may say, well, we've done that this way this whole time and nothing's ever happened. That's fine. You want to know why? Because about 95% of people in this game don't know what they're doing. So when you get the 5%er who shows up and you have a really big job, maybe somebody takes it pro bono, which means for free because they're going to embarrass you. And maybe it's associated with something big, something that's gaining media attention, and they represent your defendant and they know it's an easy kill because you failed to listen to things I'm telling you here, which are the truth, to try to help you. And you could be an antagonist about this training and what I'm explaining here. Don't blame me. I always tell people in the class, if you continue to do the things the way you're doing them and you get fucked up on it and you get screwed up or you get sued or you lose a case, whatever it may be, that's your fault. You now know better. I'm empathetic with people who don't know any better and they're learning in this thing. I get it. I'm empathetic with it. I really am. I'm not trying to sound aggressive. I'm trying to educate. This is the way I educate folks. So there are many times where I will tell people to do something and they will say, well, no, we had this happen. Nothing happened with it. I know. But if you had gotten somebody who actually knew what they were doing with this certain circumstance, it would be easily suppressed dismissed, whatever it may be. I don't tell you these things because it makes me feel cool. I tell you these things because it makes me feel cool that you guys don't lose shit in court and SOPs change and people get corrected. The name of this game here is to try to get you guys to do things the right way. So this way, you don't have to go, oh my God, we didn't know that. We're losing this case. We're getting it dismissed. We're going to a suppression hearing. Giving you advice to help that from prevent that from happening. Okay? So, let's see. Got a comment here. People who disagree with you should be locked up for obstruction. Hey, thanks, Rob. That's a really kind thing to say. You could disagree with me, but I have facts. All you have to do is show up and bring facts to me. Is it possible that I could be wrong? Yeah, I have humility. But I mean, like, guys, I sit here, I read this stuff all day. It's like my job, it's my living. I understand it. I internalize it. I'm trying to give it to you guys as best as possible. So whatever your opinion may be, I promise you it's authentic. I'm not a crazy person. I'm literally here to try to make you guys do a better job. Anyway, let me go down a little bit. All right, no more comments at this junction. So now that that's addressed, you could look at that comment earlier. I'm 100% behind the advice that I gave in 2016. I didn't watch the video, but I know it was accurate and correct. Now, let's see. Reply to is, we have a reply in the comment. What are you gonna do? Can't win it all over. As a matter of fact, when I gave this advice in Donus, in the video I did, random plate inquiries, how to make them bulletproof, State v. Donus, I actually had a case come out where a prosecutor's office in South Jersey had reached out to me and requested advice on an officer who had done just this. What they did was they did a random plate inquiry. When they stopped the car, there was no PC or odor or anything like that. The person who was suspended in the MDT was clearly not the person who was the driver. The point to this is you have to do a matchup. Whether it's still, you know, the courts have said, hey, look, you're authorized to make the traffic stop. When you walk up to the car, you need to do a matchup. You have to. State versus Donus, it says match up right in there. Somebody is disagreeing with that, and that's fine. That's your own opinion. Continue doing your thing. Now, how do I know this is correct? Because what happened in this case is this happened. The guy continued with the motor vehicle stop, found a significant amount of narcotics and a handgun, and it was all suppressed based on the fact that the guy did not have an accurate matchup or did not cease and desist from the point where he realized the person who was completely different and the only sole occupant in the car who was driving the car was not the person who was suspended on the MDT. So how do you fix that? You find a motor vehicle violation, right? You can argue it all day you want, but if you're wrong and you don't just look for one additional, like you could let that MDT lead you to who you want, you know, your Alpar, oh, there's a car, you know, sorry, I don't want to say unregistered. The driver has a warrant or the driver is suspended. Like before you race to stop that car outside of being unregistered or stolen, if it has something to do with the driver themselves, just take some time and kind of turn it into a pretextual, which means just find an additional motor vehicle violation to stop the car in case, just in case I happen to be right. Just in case you could possibly be wrong and me and the Supreme Court could be maybe just accurate. It wouldn't hurt. We can have a difference of opinion. That's fine. But I'm telling you for your better good, just find a motor vehicle violation to tack on to that stop you're going to make for a motor vehicle violation based on an MDT. If you see it's not the RL, but have odor, you're good. Yeah, listen, remember, you're good up until the point that you're no good. So if during that point, let's say you pull a car over, you couldn't see who it was behind them, so you light them up, you stop them to see the driver's license, at least the person's going to match up. You start walking to the car. Before you've made that match, you smell the odor of marijuana, you are under no obligation to cease and desist at that juncture. As a matter of fact, in New Jersey, the driver becomes arrestable at that point, regardless of who they are. So now you're going into a criminal investigation immediately. You're rightfully and lawfully in the spot you're supposed to be. You're good to go. Now, other states, same thing, except you're not arrestable, or maybe you are. But in New Jersey, you're immediately arrestable as a driver. Reed State versus Judge, 1994, at that junction. Now, you could take this and go back to people that you work with and explain this, and they're going to think you're crazy because nobody does this stuff. But it's been in the law for 23 years. Actually, 24 years this year. It's 1994. It's a legit case. How things were done. I didn't have anything suppressed in my career. Straight truth, fact check it. Nothing suppressed in my career. Had a lot of drug arrests, had a lot of stolen item arrests, had a lot of a vast array of arrests, and nothing suppressed. All right. Let's go into State versus Doss here. Now, this comes out in 2002. There's actually follow up State v. Crawley to this, but it's a good case to advocate my point. And the question that I had from somebody was regarding hey, if we stop a car and we ask somebody to step out of a car and they refuse to, is that obstructing administration of law? And what supports that? Well, we have a few cases on that. One is State versus Manning. It's 1977. Although it's old, they don't refresh it. That's why they have unpublished opinions, right? So there's published opinions and unpublished opinions in the court. What does that mean? If there's nothing new to add, stuff doesn't get published. I'm sorry. So it becomes unpublished opinions. And then some stuff gets published. Who decides that? There's a board of, I forgot what they call them, like auditors of cases that decide whether this is going to be published or not, whether it's going to change the law, where it's got to be something that other lawyers can reference. Let's go into this one. Let me explain it to you. Here's what happens in DOS. It's November 29th. It's Bridgeton. There's a people lined up against a wall that's known for a high crime area. They sell drugs there. There's some narcotics detectives. They pull up. Somebody yells police. Everybody starts running. One of the guys who they've noticed is engaged in criminal activity based on their surveillance they've done previously. He runs. They yell stop. They tackle him. They cuff him. When they cuff him, they open his hand and find a quantity of cocaine. He goes to suppress the cocaine. The court said, no, you can't suppress the cocaine, because when you ran from these officers for a totality of the circumstances, you were in fact violating obstructing administration of law, 2C29(1), or in your state, something similar, whatever it may be, for this New Jersey case law. So here's some of the things they said. I'm going to read verbatim out of the case to help you guys understand what a lot of this stuff means. However, for more than 20 people to have gathered in a parking lot at 11:30 on a cold, dark November night in an area where drug trafficking was known to be prevalent, when someone in the crowd shouted alarm, as soon as he recognized the vehicle which had arrived was a police car, causing three or four persons, including the defendant, to separate themselves from the crowd and run, the circumstances sufficient to cause an experienced policeman to think that persons who were fleeing had been engaged in conduct which they were trying to hide from the police. When Detective Parks recognized the defendant as someone who he had seen conversing with convicted drug dealers on a number of occasions, the officer's suspicions would necessarily have heightened. Under the circumstances, although the police did not have probable cause to arrest and search the defendant, they would have been remiss, which means they would have made a mistake if they had not attempted to stop and interrogate him. They were legally entitled to order the defendant to halt, and they were entitled to use non-lethal force to compel compliance with their command. All right. Let's see here. Under the Fourth Amendment, police officers with reasonable suspicion that an individual has committed or is about to commit a crime may detain the individual using some force if necessary for the purpose of asking investigative questions. And I'll add all this language into this as I usually do in the cases that are cited. There's no disputing the truth. You may not have heard it. It may sound foreign to you, but it is the truth. When a suspect is sought to evade a valid Terry stop, which is an investigative detention, by fleeing into a private premises, the police are not required to simply shrug their shoulders and allow the crime to occur or a criminal to escape. You are allowed to hold people on investigative detention. It's just like a motor vehicle stop. That's how it's deemed. It's not custody. It's an investigative detention designed to investigate if you actually have a crime. You're not PC to arrest just yet, but you're holding them because you have enough reasonable suspicion to believe that this person has violated the law in some junction. This is also the time where you'll be able to, you'll be allowed to compel identification from somebody when they must provide it to you. Same thing with a motor vehicle stop. Okay. Let's see. In the present case, once the totality of the circumstances observed by police justifiably aroused an articulable suspicion which warranted their stopping and interrogating the defendant, he was legally obligated to halt in response to their shouted orders to stop, and subject to his privilege against self-incrimination, he had a duty to answer their inquiries. As the court stated in Leshinsky, where officers' instructions are obviously reasonable, 130 in furtherance of his duties, an individual toward whom which such instructions directed had a correlative duty to obey them. So what they're saying here is, if a cop tells you to stop, you got to stop. All right. If your cop tells you got to stop, you got to stop. Now, it says defendant continued his flight from pursuing officers despite their shouted orders to halt. His refusal to obey their orders, together with all the other circumstances of the case, gave the police reasonable cause to believe that he had committed or was then committing a criminal offense. All right. 2C29(1). Which is obstructing, condemns interference. A person commits an offense if he purposely prevents or attempts to prevent a public servant from lawfully performing an official function by means of physical interference or obstacle. The implication of Leshinsky is that refusing to obey the order of a policeman constitutes interference within the meaning of 29(1). See State versus Manning, what I talked about. An automobile's passenger refusal to comply with a policeman's order to return to his car interfered with the meaning of 2C29(1). Also see the Township of East Brunswick versus Maltefano and Taylor versus New Jersey. Now, when they address he was ordering them to get back into the car, that also means if you tell them to get out of the car and they're failing to comply with that, and let's say it's a passenger who has reasonable, you don't even need reasonable suspicion. You have a reason, right? Under State v. Brian Smith, and I'll poach that one in here as well. You have a reason, a heightened caution, which doesn't have to be a danger factor, to ask a passenger out of a car and you're investigating something, whatever it may be, and they're refusing a lawful order, yes, they can be charged with obstructing administration of law. I've had that exact occurrence happen just once in my career where a passenger who was subject to a narcotics investigation refused to step out of the car. Later on, after having used force to pull him out, later on, he apologized for his actions. But the 2C291 stuck because I knew that you could charge him with that. Also see State versus Pearlstein, where this court held that a driver who refused to show their driver credentials to a policeman and who moved her car to contrary to his directions was guilty of attempting to prevent a public servant from lawfully performing an official function by means of physical interference. Also see State versus Wanjik. Resisting a policeman's efforts to complete a pat-down violates obstructing. Since defendant's refusal to pay a policeman's order to halt was interference condemned by 2C291, he was committing either a crime or a disorderly offense, a person's offense, in the presence of the officers. In any event, they were entitled to arrest him and conduct a search incident to the arrest. Okay. Now, I think that's it as far as what I have in notes from this case. Hopefully you learned something from this. Now, what's the authority that allows you to have somebody step out of a car? Well, I will put that up there too, but it's Pennsylvania versus Mims, there's Brian K. Smith and Brian L. Smith, both are pertinent to this video, but they also say that, hey, we adopt the Mims standard. If you order a driver to step out of a car, they must comply. That's the authority. If you're asking passengers to step out of a car and you have the right to at whatever junction you find yourself at and they refuse to, yes, that would be violating the obstructing administration of law. It's violating 2C291 for New Jersey people. Lastly, answering a question from a group member right before I went live, here's what he writes, and this is a simple one. Yo, brother, quick question. Or didn't know if you could cover this in your next video. Well, guess what, pal? I am. For an instance, if you have reason to search a vehicle for, say, odor or documents, etc., please don't do document searches unless it's in, no matter where you are. If you have an MDT, or you know who the person is, or you actually have a dispatcher that can come back with results, you can't do document searches. We have two cases that came out, one out of Union Township, and then State versus, off the top of my head, Julian B. Hamlet, okay, that comes out of South Jersey. The only time you're allowed to go into a car to do document searches, especially if you have an MDT, and they say it very clearly in these cases, is if you have a rental vehicle and the person is refusing to provide you with the rental agreement or you can't find the rental agreement. So do not do document searches. Let me just address that. You observe some type of CDS on the floorboard or other type of paraphernalia. Should you stop the search before finding the drugs before searching further? No. As a matter of fact, that's great because now you can begin to expand the scope of your search, right? You may find enough stuff. Let's say you initiate a search in a motor vehicle for the odor of burnt marijuana in New Jersey. Now, this is New Jersey, so people around the country, it's a little weird. This doesn't pertain to you. Let's say you have the odor of burnt marijuana. You go into a car, now you start finding things that would make you believe that this person's engaged in drug trafficking. I don't know, 1,000 Apple bags, scales, ledgers to believe that there's possible more stuff in the trunk. Now, again, let's just go back to my rule that I always say for people in New Jersey. This is New Jersey. Because we have limitations on where we can go with searching cars and we have probable cause, and depending on the probable cause, if you have a doubt of where you can go into what compartment, here's a simple fix. Ask consent, call for a canine, or apply for a search warrant. And people constantly are weary about this. Oh, we don't know if we like this. Let me go through this again for the 744th time. In New Jersey, because you have search limitations, which a lot of times, because most of you are only taking the opportunity to search a car when you smell marijuana, which, by the way, is going to end, and I'm advocating that. So learn how to do consent to search forms when you have reasonable suspicion. Learn how to use anything outside of the odor of marijuana to determine whether or not you're going to search a car. And make sure you have administrative support with this. But if you're limited to going into and you can't get into the trunk of a car, how else would you get into the trunk if you can't ask for consent or get under the hood? And I'm cautioning everybody across the country, if you have consent to search forms, make sure they're not constitutionally vague. Make sure they actually say searching under the hood too. So you should be searching under the hood when you're searching cars. If you're not, you're making a huge mistake. You should be searching trunks when you're stopping a car. Just because you think this, just because the odor of burnt New Jersey may only get you the passenger compartment, it doesn't mean your search stops there. How do you get to the trunk? Simple. You ask for consent. Maybe search the car first. Come back and tell the defendant, hey, we didn't find enough to go into the trunk of the car. However, I'm asking you for consent to search the trunk of your car. Would you sign this form? The question I have to you is when you're antagonistic to this is, how else can you get into the trunk? Sir, you don't want to sign a consent to search form for us to go into your trunk? No problem. We'll call for a canine unit. Every class, there's usually a canine handler here in the class, and we discuss why when a canine indicates on a car, it allows you to search the entire car because they may have the product in the trunk or in the rear of the car, I'm sorry, or the front of the car. And when the car drives, it pushes the odor all over, and the odor can get trapped in taillights. We had a canine guy in the class earlier this week on Monday, and he said, dude, my dog has hit on taillights. What are you going to do, start disassembling the taillight? Obviously, it's in the car somewhere. I should turn the volume off on this stupid thing. That's crazy. You hear the thing beeping off? Let me turn the volume off. Of course, it stopped. I don't know what it's doing. Come on. Anyway, I'll just ignore it. So, with that being said, you don't have to stop and get a search warrant. Let's go into State v. William Witt, came out in 2015, abolishes and gets rid of State v. Peña Flores. You guys got to stop thinking about these stupid fucking search warrants in these cars. There are times you will need them, but very, very seldomly, unforeseen and spontaneous. You've developed probable cause. You do not need to apply for a search warrant. I had a prosecutor who came to my class recently who was an advocate of this and changed his tune when it was explained to him properly and said he will be advocating that we are not seeking search warrants in a county that was notorious for ignoring State v. William Witt. He got it, which is good. I'm happy that he came to class and learned why. So I have nothing bad to say about him. He has embraced the training. Agree with it 100%. I can screenshot it and show it to everybody. He said everything in the class that I taught, he was endorsing behind and said he would change the whole – he was going to work on changing the whole thing at the prosecutor's office. Now, let me go to William Witt here. I'm just scrolling through my thing because the second part of the question requires an answer from William Witt. Almost there. I'm just going through my program here. Should have done this beforehand. Okay. Almost there. Okay. So the second part of the question was this. And let me read it from him verbatim. Let me go back a little bit here. Sorry, boys and girls. So his second question was also prior, if the driver is placed in the car before the search and you find the CDS paraphernalia, should you get a warrant? Let me talk about this. The answer to that is no. And here's some of the excerpts from William Witt. Significantly, we also made clear in Alston Super that merely because the particular occupants of the vehicle may have been removed from the car, arrested, or otherwise restricted in their freedom of movement, police are not required to secure a warrant. Ta-da! I don't know how you argue with that. That's Supreme Court ruling, their opinion. There you go. So that answers your question. I'm going to answer some. Let's see. So just so I'm clear, driver and passenger on a valid motor vehicle stop must step out of the vehicle if I ask them to, no matter what. JT, if you're in New Jersey, driver without reasonable suspicion, but I would tell you that don't get into the habit of asking everybody out of a car, especially if you're a ticket guy and you're really running radar and you're not building up cases or you're having pretextual, you're not having reasonable suspicion. But yes, we have adopted the MIMS standard, which, and why do they say that? Why do they say people are when they're asked to step out of a car, there's lawful authority for police officers to do that. Believe it or not, if you read the cases, it says it's safer for people to have you stepped out of a car off to the side of the road. Why? So police officers can see their hands, because it's much more dangerous for a cop to be behind somebody and them to be reaching for things that cops can't see their hands. So that's what's the authority. It's a safety purpose, and we can use it for investigative purpose as well. So read the cases that I'll cite in here. You need a heightened caution in New Jersey to ask passengers out, but it's very, very minimal. It's one fact or specific facts in the totality of the circumstances. So it could be anything. You go into a criminal investigation on a motor vehicle stop, you have suspicions of narcotics, you certainly are within your authority to begin separating passenger from drivers. And maybe if you believe you're, you know, at some junction, you're definitely going to find something. You don't want them contaminating the product of the car. You're good. I've never been challenged on asking somebody out of a car, especially a passenger, when I'm building up reasonable suspicion. That's inevitable. I'm doing that anyway. There was a case that came out in Woodbridge State versus Taiwan Bacomb, where the appellate division ruled against our police officers. And then the Supreme Court division reversed their decision and said, No, these officers were within the right. I'm going to write down Taiwan Bacomb so I can put it up here in this one too. I put in the video the other day as well. Let me go down a little bit. K9. Yeah, Dan, you got it. Your Grindr account is getting hits. I don't know what Grindr is. The issue is not asking for consent, but when the K9 doesn't hit. Well, listen, man, it's police work, right? You do your best. You work with what you got. You don't ever do anything illegal. You work within the confines of the law. Sometimes we win. And actually, most of the time we win, and sometimes we lose. I don't know what to tell you. Thank you, at Illinois. JT, so read Pennsylvania versus Mims, brother. That's a U.S. Supreme Court case that I'm guessing that they're following in your state. It's a federal standard. I've never heard of another state having anything different than what that says. It's a lot of info. So with that being said, guys, have a great night. I'm sure I'll be back on here tomorrow with 7:30 or model. All right. If you need anything, reach out to me.